Akhotra Foundation presents the Akhotra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Akhotra AI. Welcome back. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a really powerful book, Carla Cornejo Villavicencio's The Undocumented Americans. It came out in 2020, finalist for the National Book Award.
Yeah, a really significant piece of work. It's not quite memoir, not quite traditional reporting.
Exactly. It's this blend, creative nonfiction, they call it. And our mission today really is to get past all the political noise surrounding immigration.
Mm-hmm.
We want to unpack the raw human cost, especially the psychological toll of living undocumented, living in the shadows. Villavicencio herself called the book a radical act of bearing witness.
And it's important to get who the subject is here. It's not one person.
Right.
It's the undocumented Americans, plural. Day laborers, students, right. Parents. Mostly from Latin America, living without papers.
Yeah.
And crucially, the author, Villavicencio. She was undocumented for years. So she's both narrator and, in a way, subject.
Just writing from the inside.
Absolutely. Gives it this unique, really searing authority.
Okay, so let's trace her journey a bit. Her formative years seem absolutely key to understanding her perspective.
Definitely. It starts with this profound sense of, well, separation. She was born in Ecuador in 1982, but her parents left for the U.S. when she was only, what, 18 months old?
Just a baby. Left with grandparents.
Yeah, for 5 years.
Mm.
And that separation, that early abandonment, she says it created this psychic burden. She calls it the haunting.
The haunting. Wow.
It's not just a bad memory. It's this persistent feeling like being in absence, a ghost in your own life, cut off from your parents.
Yeah.
It's foundational to everything she writes.
So even when she finally rejoins them in Queens 5 years later, that feeling doesn't just vanish.
No, not at all. It sort of morphs.
Yeah.
It feeds into the anxiety, the constant fear that comes with living without legal status. You're always sort of spectral, never fully safe or present.
Which makes her later achievements like even more complex, right?
It's a huge paradox. I mean, she's brilliant. Goes to Harvard, one of the first undocumented students to graduate. On paper, that's the perfect dreamer success story.
The kind politicians love to point to.
Exactly. But she grew to really critique, even despise that narrative.
Why? Why push back against that success story?
Well, because it put her in this incredibly difficult liminal space. Educated, visible, but still legally precarious. And she felt that celebrating her exceptionalism was dangerous.
How so?
Because it implicitly suggests that only the exceptional immigrant, the Harvard grad, deserves rights or sympathy. What about everyone else? The laborers, the people struggling with trauma or depression? Her point is, an immigrant's worth shouldn't depend on fitting this narrow mold of success.
Ah, I see. That makes sense. And that feeds directly into her core philosophy, what you call this radical humanism.
Precisely. She refuses to let the undocumented experience be just a political football or a bunch of statistics. For her, it's about lived reality. It's about bodies and minds suffering under immense pressure.
She insists on showing the full picture. The resilience, yes, but also the flaws, the depression, the anger.
Yeah, the messy, complex humanity. She has this righteous anger. You know, she wants to tear down those simplistic stereotypes, especially that damaging split between the good immigrant and the bad immigrant.
Okay, so that anger, it's not just emotion. It actually fuels her intellectual framework for the book. Let's dive into that central idea, the body as a text. What does she mean by that? Illness being political?
It's a really powerful concept. She basically argues that the physical bodies of undocumented people act like archives.
Archives.
Yeah, living documents. They store the history of their labor, the trauma they've endured, the systemic neglect. Physical ailments aren't just random bad luck. They're like biographies written onto the body by their circumstances, by the lack of protection.
Can you give an example? Like, how does that play out in the book?
Sure. Her own father is a key example. He worked for years as a delivery man. Incredibly grueling work. No safety net. She talks about his chronic aching back. But she doesn't just see it as pain. She sees it as an archive of neglect.
Yeah.
Society needed his labor, but denied him basic protections, health care. His body literally recorded the cost of surviving in the shadows.
Wow, the body recording the cost, that's intense. And writing about this, documenting it, it became a kind of debt repayment for her.
Very much so. Deeply personal, it was a way to honor her parents' generation, to give meaning to their sacrifices beyond just, you know, scraping by.
Mm.
Documenting their lives was an act of love, of respect.
And this mission got supercharged by politics, right? The 2016 election was a catalyst.
Huge catalyst. The rise in anti-immigrant rhetoric, the threat to programs like DACA, it created this urgent ticking clock feeling.
So she felt she had to get these stories down now.
Exactly. She used her DACA status, which gave her temporary protection and the ability to travel legally within the U.S., to basically fan out across the country.
Yeah.
She needed to capture these experiences before that window potentially slammed shut.
Okay, so that urgency sends her out into the field. And the book highlights three really pivotal experiences that seem to shape her whole argument. Let's talk about the first one, the 9/11 Ground Zero cleanup workers.
Yeah, this is just devastating. She reports on undocumented day laborers, mainly in Staten Island and Brooklyn. These guys rushed into the toxic dust of the World Trade Center site right after the towers fell.
Essential workers in that moment, heroes even.
They were hailed as heroes, briefly. But because they were undocumented, they had no long-term support, no access to proper health care for the consequences.
The consequences were severe.
Catastrophic. Oh. She documents men suffering from horrible cancers, respiratory diseases, neurological damage, all directly linked to working unprotected in that toxic environment. It's just the ultimate exploitation and betrayal.
Gave their health, sometimes their lives, and then were just abandoned.
Utterly abandoned because they lacked papers. That experience, she says, really crystallized her core thesis. This is fundamentally a story about labor and about systemic betrayal.
Okay, moving to the second turning point. Her trip to Flint, Michigan during the water crisis. How did that broaden her perspective?
Flint showed how immigration status intersects with other systemic failures. It wasn't just about labor exploitation there.
What was the specific issue for undocumented residents in Flint?
Fear. Intense fear of ICE. They desperately needed clean water like everyone else, but they were terrified to go to the official water distribution centers or seek any kind of government health aid.
Because showing up might mean getting reported, deported.
Exactly. They feared checkpoints, feared getting onto some list. So their legal status didn't just block them from getting help. It basically weaponized their vulnerability during an environmental disaster, compounding the environmental racism already at play.
So it showed how being undocumented makes you sort of disproportionately vulnerable to any crisis.
Precisely. It exacerbates every other systemic injustice. Public health, environment, labor rights, they're always hit hardest.
And the final turning point is much more personal, internal. Her decision to pursue citizenship, which she eventually got through marriage, you'd expect this to be a triumphant ending, but it wasn't.
Not in the way you might think. Her description is incredibly ambivalent. It wasn't this happy arrival moment. It was full of internal conflict, even a profound sense of loss.
Loss. Loss of what?
She describes it almost like a death, the death of the undocumented person she'd have been forced to be for so long. And she talks about intense survivor's guilt.
Guilt about leaving the community she'd been writing about.
Yeah, feeling like she was abandoning them, crossing a line they couldn't. It showed that even changing legal status doesn't just erase the wounds, the trauma inflicted by the system over years.
Wow. Okay, so stepping back from these specific stories, what can we learn from Villavicencio's whole approach here? What are the bigger human lessons?
Well, I think the first big one is about the power of witnessing. Her method is fundamentally different from a lot of journalists.
Oh, so?
She rejects detachment. She chooses immersion, presence. She doesn't pretend to have easy answers or policy solutions. Her job, as she sees it, is just to be there. To witness, to offer solidarity. She even admits sometimes language just fails to capture the pain she sees.
Just sitting with the discomfort, as you said earlier.
Exactly. And that connects directly to the second lesson. Her insistence that mental health is a political outcome. She's incredibly open about her own struggles. Anxiety, depression, PTSD.
Which is still pretty rare in this kind of reporting.
Very. And she explicitly links her struggles not to personal feeling, but to the systemic adversity. The chronic grinding stress of being undocumented. It reframes mental health issues not as weakness, but as a predictable, almost logical response to an impossible situation.
That's a powerful reframing. Okay, and the third lesson touches on journalistic ethics, and it's pretty controversial, paying her sources.
Yeah, this really challenges traditional journalistic norms. Standard practice is you don't pay sources, right? The argument being it could compromise objectivity or incentivize people to lie.
Right. So why did she do it? How did she justify it?
For her, it was an ethical imperative, rooted in that same radical humanism. She argued that asking people, especially vulnerable people, to spend hours recounting often traumatic life stories is a form of labor.
Asking them to work, essentially.
Yes. And to not compensate them for that emotional labor and time, especially when many rely on hourly wages or day labor, felt like just another form of exploitation to her. She wanted the exchange to be equitable, not extractive.
It flips the power dynamic, doesn't it? Makes it more of a respectful exchange.
Completely.
Okay, we've covered a lot. The psychic toll, the body as archive, the ethical challenges. Let's try to boil this down into three final takeaways for everyone listening.
Okay, I think the core emotional insight she leaves us with is that concept of the haunting. It's that lingering psychological shadow of trauma, of separation, of displacement. It stays with you, that ghost of what was lost or feared, even if circumstances change.
Right. It's not something you just get over.
Then the key intellectual insight. For me, it's her powerful argument that objectivity, particularly when facing clear injustice, is often a myth. Her deeply subjective, committed stance isn't a flaw in her reporting. It's arguably a more honest form of journalism. She shows that neutrality isn't really neutral. It often implicitly sides with the status quo, with the powerful.
Okay, objectivity as myth in the face of injustice. And finally, a universal insight, something that applies more broadly.
I think it's the idea that illness is a biography. Our physical health, our mental health, they weren't just random events. They are records. They reflect our work, our stress, our environment, our position in society. That aching back, that constant anxiety, they tell a story about our lives within the systems we inhabit.
That really makes you think differently about your own aches and pains, doesn't it?
It really does. Ultimately, the undocumented Americans forces us to stop seeing immigration as just some abstract policy debate.
It demands we see it for what it is.
Yeah. As a matter of public health, physical survival, and deep psychological integrity for millions of people.
So maybe the takeaway for you listening is, next time you hear the news, try to listen for what's not being said, for the human cost hidden behind the headlines. That feels like the crucial first step. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thank you.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.